the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's Boundless Show. I'm here in the studio with Mott and Steve. Hi guys.
Hey.
Hi Lisa.
Mott, what's going on with you? You're wearing a fleece.
Is that chilly? It's cold in the studio.
Okay. It is cold because it is winter. And
it's winter 10 months out of the year here.
It is not. That is so ridiculous.
It's
whatever.
It's warmer outside than it is
lovely.
In the studio, though, right
it
now.
It might be, yeah, because the sun's out, which is great. We're actually doing this show as a little bit of a pre-tape because I'm heading to Minnesota this weekend for my 12-week vacation that I often take around Christmas. No, not 12 weeks, but those of you who will remember that last year I got kind of like stuck there a little bit because of the snow and stuff, so was not able to be part of that, and I'm like, no, I need to be part of it. So
right.
So we're just heading into 2010, or as some people like to say, 2010.
And what will we call that?
What do we call the year?
The teens?
The new year?
Oh, I don't even know.
We never quite figured out what to call this past decade, did we? The aughts?
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't know what I'm going to do about it. I think this is going to be a very, very difficult check writing season. Oh. I think the 10's going to be hard for me. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to make the transition, but the past few years it hasn't been too bad, but I think 1-0 is going to be hard.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But anyway, so we are basically just on the cusp, I like that word, of a new year and a new decade, and we need to think about just where we're going with our lives. And we thought we would sit around.
We do.
Some of us have a few more maybe things that we need to get lined up than others. But no, we just thought we'd throw it out there because we get, you know, this is kind of the young adults or the people who reflect on these things. We've talked in the past about writing down goals and stuff for the new year and what that looks like. And do you guys have any goals? Steve, I know you do. They're probably on a spreadsheet. You and Candace, tell us about them.
No, they didn't make it to a spreadsheet, but I've been starting writing some notes to prepare for the planning time we do, because we always try the week of New Year's, whether it's maybe a few days before or within a couple of days, to get away and do a little planning. And one of the things I'm really hopeful for, something I've had to slide from previous years, is building a deck. We just have the worst outdoor situation. I don't know.
Now, you really do. Confused with clearing the decks, because that was another.
It's building the decks after the decks have been cleared.
Okay.
We just need a deck.
I've been over to Steve's house, and he has a pile of rocks out his back door.
It's lame, and we had built a deck at the other house we'd been at and just loved it. And so anyway, it's not exactly spiritually meaningful.
Are you going to do it yourself?
No, I don't think so, because I just don't think I can do it as nice as I'd like it to be. But the other thing is, I'm looking into next year. You know, our listeners may have already figured out that I'm not exactly in the target age range, but next year I'm really feeling like I'm getting out of the target age range because Candace and I will turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changes how I look into next year and thinking not only how to make next year significant, but just that whole transition into that decade, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a big one.
Hmm. What about you, Mott?
Well, Lisa, I'm a melancholy personality. You probably know that about me. But I love life, so I'm looking forward to a lot of things. But I think mainly it's the Lord knitting our family together. Mm. We adopted 4 kids last year, and we are still in transition. And I'm looking forward to that time when I just grow really close with my new kids. And I'm hopeful for that. We pray for that often, and we just hear from other adoptive families that it does take time, 1, 2, 3 years even. So we are looking to grow together as a family. And I am also looking forward to warm weather when it comes around in July. Here.
Oh my goodness. It's warm even in January sometimes here.
So sometimes.
Yeah.
Like for a day.
Just depends. But
how about you, Lisa?
You know, I was trying to think about this the other day because I usually do set a few goals, you know, for the new year. And I always have kind of my standard ones of reading certain books and doing different things. It's always funny for me when I go home for Christmas because I talk to my mom, and my mom is, you know, as I've said before on the show, she's only giving the Lord till she's 85. So her clock is just ticking, apparently. So that's pretty cute. But I talk to her about a lot of this this stuff. And she says, you know, inevitably when I go home for Christmas, the two things that she cares about are, am I bringing my flute to play the flute? Because she wants to hear that thing one more time before she dies. So I always get that guilt trip every year. And that's just pretty much awesome. And then the other thing is that I need to write something. I need to put something. She always wants me to write about our family because it's just crazy. And she's like, you need to put these stories down and write it and stuff. And so I think I'm going to come up with some kind of goal to just start writing down some of these anecdotes about my family. I have no idea how to tie this thing together into a book. I mean, I have all these people saying, put it into a book, but I don't know what to say with it.
Well, the best way to do it, Lisa, is they've got those blogs now where you start writing the blog and then you can automatically turn it into a book.
Okay, I didn't even know about that.
See, that's all you need.
Okay.
I mean, you can write a blog post at a time.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to try that. So maybe that'll be one of my goals for this coming year, because everyone's always like, I'll retell the same stories about my sister's wedding or about crazy online experiences or about, you know, whatever, my family. And everyone's like, if you wrote a book, I would read it. And I'm like, okay, these are just a bunch of anecdotes.
I want to hear you play the flute.
I know.
Could you bring it into the studio?
I should. Okay, this is a sadness in my life. This is a conversation I had yesterday. I used to be a very good flutist.
Is it flautist?
Okay? It's either flutist or flautist,
oh, both
however you
work.
Want to say.
Good.
Totally both ways. And I'm a little snobby about it. And you know how this plays out? It plays out with marching bands. When I went to our Festival of Lights parade here in Colorado Springs, very critical of these high school marching bands because basically they're dumb. They're lame. Okay. My high school marching man was the best in the nation for the first 2 or 3 years I was in high school, and then other bands started cropping up and getting better and putting more money into the programs. Yeah. But we seriously like marched, like it was hardcore, and all this stuff that's just silliness and people like marching with like Christmas lights on them. That's not cool. So anyway, I used to be very good. Now I do not practice anymore. And so I realize I'm not as good. And quite frankly, I need to completely overhaul my flute, blah, blah, blah. So it's just very, it's very concerning to me, and it just bums me out. And my mom always gives me the guilt trip and says, you know, I paid for 17 years of lessons, and I was just, I would love to hear that flute once in a while. And so, anyway, so she's really cute about that. So I usually play at Christmas when I go home, and it's always some big drama. Though now I often go to a music store there and, like, rent a flute for while I'm there, because to take it on the airplane is a big rigmarole, because they always think it's a weapon, and then I have to declare all this craziness. So
Lisa, can't you just, you know, like, go buy a recorder? And just
I could and just do Renaissance tunes. I could do that. And it, actually, you know, recorder, you can play similar stuff on it. But no, it has to be the flute. That, and then my mom's always like, she always wants me to sing. And let's be honest, I'm not Celine Dion. I actually used to sing a lot too. But my mom just like has this way overinflated opinion of me in everything that I do. And it's just awesome. So it's always like, you know, that and my brother-in-law, can you two just do a duet? I just want you to sing a duet. And we're like, we don't even sing hardly at all. It's just,
see, that sounds like my grandma. Every time we used to get the family together, she would just start doling out the assignments. Hey, do that one song, and you have that poem ready, and hey, Ryan, you do that breakdance thing. Yeah. Okay, let's get that going.
See, I had a great grandma. She just wanted to play canasta all the time, and I love canasta.
That's pretty awesome. So, well, anyway, so it's just fun. I mean, it's fun to think about. You know, I do think about that with my mom a lot, just because she, you know, of course, she's talked about this on the show too, about she just loves heaven and wants to talk about heaven and getting there and everything like that. So she kind of brings me back, you know, refocused about what's really important and what should we be looking toward. So
and you'll be playing that flute in heaven, Lisa.
I will, as I'm sitting on my little cloud with my wings and others are playing the harp, and I'll do a flute accompaniment to it. So yeah, that's some good times. What do we want to see on the show in 2010? What do you guys think?
I want to have Tiger Woods on the show.
I think that would be great.
After he's finished his recovery process and talk about what it's been like to reengage with family life.
Mm-hmm. I had one of our listeners dangle some false hope in front of me, because she emailed us about Tyler Perry coming out here.
Oh yeah.
Supposed to be here the 5th and 6th. Okay, so I went to the site. Now they've changed it to like Portland and Seattle. I think they're completely skipping Colorado, which is not cool, because I love him in Madea's, you know, all the Madea stuff, Diary of a Mad Black Woman and stuff. And two, if he weren't so you know, prosperity gospel. I was wearing. I'm just saying that.
They found out you'd be stalking him if he was in town. I know.
We are going to try some new things, though. We're going to go to some music festivals.
Oh,
at least
good.
We're going to send you, Lisa, whoa, if you're up for it.
Oh, that's fun. I would love to do it. There's
and we'd love
like
to get more listeners on
standing
that
in a hot
oh, yeah,
field and listening to bands.
The 100th celebration was fantastic. I love those shows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we got to get more listeners on the air. They were great.
We do. And I'm going to be honest, Julie and who else? Catherine. There were a couple other people that posted on my wall feeling like they got a big diss because we didn't call them.
Oh, so, yeah. So there were three or four that we didn't have time for.
Didn't
Rachel
okay
was one of them.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
We need to get them on the air.
We are so sorry, you guys. And so we're going to get you on. We're either going to get you on the air. We'll either call you or Mott and Steve will fly you out here and put you up at the Broadmoor for 4 days as
so
we call you on the show.
So like we said, we'll call you.
It's going to be one of the two.
You need to tell them, though. That, I mean, it was a marathon show. We were here for 3 hours.
It was. It was a long time.
Yeah, Mott had no lunch because of
I
that.
Didn't.
Oh, Mott,
I ate
so
a Pop-Tart. When I got back to my desk.
That's why. So you've lost weight and now you have to wear fleece because you
lost
don't have anything weight on your bones.
I lost weight.
So that's tragic. Okay, well, and I want to talk, you know, about some more relationship things, of course, in the new year because...
We should talk about relationships sometimes.
Occasionally. Because I have two things I want to talk about. One is guys and pain, like when there are undefined relationships and or weirdness and or just like guys taking one girl out. Should they just get her stuff? You know, whatever.
Oh,
avoiding
pain.
That awkwardness.
Oh
no, not pain.
Pain.
I did
no,
too.
Pain. Pain, like in social activities.
Oh.
Guys in pain. We can talk about that too, whatever. That
a little Advil is all I'm saying.
Yeah. That, and then I think we've touched on this in a past show, but I can't remember it. And that's just the whole, I was in a discussion last night that brought up my year of horror online with online dating. And I want to talk about that and just how we build, you know, connection with people. And then we're just too connected. So then we just marry them. And then maybe that's not good.
So you just drift into something and then you
you drift into something right that may actually be marriage. And then that's
that is
dangerous.
The danger with some online dating services.
That's true. Not with others, including some that are coming up that we're going to talk about in the near future.
That's correct.
You never know.
Okay. Well, so keep your ears open, people, and keep listening. 2010, we've made it 2 years. We have another year ahead of us, which is super. And my life is still crazy, so I think we'll have some good fodder for the coming year. That's unfortunate. I would prefer if you guys would occasionally weigh in with something crazy from your own lives instead of just acting like you have it all together. That'd be awesome. Thanks. All right, well, good stuff, guys.
There's a beggar in every one of us just looking for some change. Second chance, a new romance, something different we got today. All I have is in my hands, it's what I got to use. So I'll throw it down on the ground just to see what it can do. Life we're living is not a life at all. They say it's in the time life begins for us all. Take your money, give it all to charity. Burn your house down. Chance to sacrifice everything to make a difference. We've got lives and problems that we say we gotta deal with first. So we water down the gospel as the world's out of thirst. Life we're living is not a life at all. They say it's in the dying light.
All right, for this week's culture segment, I am joined by Mark Batterson. He is coming to us all the way from Washington, D.C. Mark, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Awesome. Mark is the lead pastor at National Community Church. I actually first met him at the Catalyst Conference last month. Got to meet him in the midst of, I think it was a break. You had just come off of leading a workshop there, I think. And we kind of met up there at Catalyst. And I was there the whole weekend manning our Boundless booth and meeting with some folks. So that was great. But you are pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C. You are also the author of In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day and Wild Goose Chase, two books that I think I read it went into its eighth printing now.
It did. It's pretty cool.
It's because of the title, honestly. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a mouthful, that's for sure.
That's true. Everyone's like, what's this crazy book? I need to buy it and read it. So, and I actually first heard about that book. It was funny because I knew that you were speaking at the conference, and then I was like, okay, well, let me find out about him. Read about the book and find out that our VP of HR actually used that book in one of her devotions that she did for a portion of our staff. And I remember that devotional that she gave. And so I was like, oh my goodness, well, here's the guy who wrote the book. So don't things
nice.
Just come full circle. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I want to find out. I mean, we talk to pastors, you know, once in a while here on the show, Mark, and you know that our show, The Boundless Show, is mostly for young adults, many of whom are single and kind of in that transitional phase between, you know, the teen and college years into young adulthood. And we like to have it. I'm going to be honest. I have interviewed Mark Dever. So we've got a competing pastor from Washington, D.C. that's been on our show. I just want to be open about that. So
I love it. Awesome. And man, we kind of tag team here on Capitol Hill. So that's great.
Well, that is good. That is needed. Let me tell you, because I did my time there. I lived on 2nd Street Northeast and worked at the Washington Times. And in fact, I think right around the time when you were getting the work started there. So we
were neighbors and we didn't even know it.
I know. That's tragic. But that was before all of my fame and glory here at The Boundless Show. So you wouldn't have known me then.
That's right.
Now that four people listen to me pretty consistently, you know, it's like I don't have time. I don't have time for just average people anymore.
Well, so. thanks for hanging out with the little guys.
Sure. Not a problem. Well, I want to find out, speaking of National Community Church, I mean, I know that your church's website is actually theaterchurch.com, T-H-E-A-T-E-R, church.com, and you actually meet in several different locations. Is that correct?
We do. We have 8 services in 4 different locations each weekend.
Okay.
And 3 of them are movie theaters. And then we own and operate the largest coffee house on Capitol Hill. And it's pretty cool because we serve 400 or 500 customers a day. And, you know, it's a first-class, fully operational coffee house. In fact, it was voted the #1 coffee house in the Metro D.C. area last year. And so we're rubbing shoulders with our neighbors, people that live and work in the area. And then we do a couple of Saturday night services. But here's what's cool, and here's why I feel so at home hanging out with you and with your listening audience, is that our church is 70% single 20-something. So
wow.
Very young congregation, and I love it because I think, you know, in your 20s, you make most of your major decisions, and you spend the rest of your life managing those decisions. And so, man, I really feel privileged to be able to pastor people in that life stage.
Exactly. So tell us, for example, if I were to go and visit, you know, go out to D.C., visit some of my old haunts, and I decide, hey, you know what, I'm gonna go stop and say hi to Mark, I'm going to go to the church. When someone walks into one of your locations, what is church? This sounds so, I don't want to make it sound like some weird marketing thing, but what does church look like at National Community Church? What are they going to find when they go into one of your locations?
Well, I mean, it feels like you're going to a movie when mm-hmm. you walk into the 3 movie theaters, but, you know, we set up our signage, and the beautiful thing is movie theaters make great auditoriums. I mean, you've got amazing screens that we kind of view as postmodern stained glass, and we've got a great media team. We do a lot of things with trying to creatively tell the gospel story. And so we kind of view the screen as postmodern stained glass, if you will. And
mm-hmm.
and then you've got comfortable movie theater seats, and we love the smell of popcorn. It's like our incense, Lisa. So, you know, it feels a little bit different, but the bottom line is man, we're preaching the gospel message because that's the only thing that's going to save people's souls. And now we're sinners in need of a Savior, and we're not going to mess with that message. We don't dumb it down. We don't, you know, soft sell it. But we do try to really incarnate that message and communicate it as creatively as we possibly can. And God's using it, you know, and He's blessing us. And so, I guess you could say we're orthodox in belief, but maybe a little bit unorthodox in practice.
Sure. Okay. Well, and that's really cool. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because we actually had last week, we had David Kinnaman here from the Barna Research Group.
Yeah.
And he was talking to us, of course, you know, Focus on the Family is going through quite a transition now, figuring out, you know, we've got a whole new generation of young families and those who are not yet married, obviously the Boundless crowd moving into marriage and ultimately parenting. And what really do we need to do to find these people and then reach them, like you said, with that message of the gospel that does not change, but possibly some of our methods do. And he talked about, he just gave anecdotally a situation, a guy that he had talked to who basically said one of his biggest dissatisfactions with the church and why he had walked away from the church. And the Barna research is showing that young adults are doing that in large percentages. I think he said that a faith change in the 20s and 30s, 7 out of 10 people who do have what they call a faith change or ultimately leave the church do so before they are 30. And these are folks who maybe grew up in traditional Christian homes or mainline denominations or whatever, you name it. So he was talking about that and basically said, you know, this guy told him, you know, what I really have a problem with is that everyone, all these Christians try to hit me with a talking point faith. And it's like, you know, you ask questions, you ask deep questions, you try to get to the root of where someone's story is or what they really believe, and you're kind of hit with these three talking points about what Christianity is. And do you see that where you are and with the singles and the young adults that you're dealing with, Mark, especially those who may be disenfranchised or disenchanted with the faith, with Christianity, because they feel like it's a list of, or I guess some kind of, a sheet of talking points?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think most people know what they believe, Lisa, but they don't really know why they believe what they believe. And there's a big difference between those two things. And so I'd like to think that the church moving forward could create an atmosphere where it's okay to ask questions and where we don't pretend to have all the answers. Now, I'm not backing off of, you know, our orthodox beliefs that we believe Jesus is the Son of God, that He lived a sinless life, that He died on the cross, was raised on the third day, and is the way, the truth, and the life. I'm not saying we back off on that. But the truth is, I think many of us have acted like we can fit God within the logical constraints of our left brain, and you can't do that. And so we've created these environments where, you know, we're almost afraid of the real questions that people are asking, and I think we've got to get past that. And so I think half the battle is just, hey, any question is okay. And I mean, for what it's worth, we do 4 alpha groups here at NCC, and one of them at our coffee house. And the alpha course is a great example of that. You allow people to ask questions that they have. And then I think the other half of the equation, Lisa, is, you know, the church is more known for what we're against than what we're for. And it's created this perception that, you know, it's like we're against this, we're against that, and that's problematic. And you know, we have got to be the ones creating culture, and we've got to be explaining what we're for and what we believe, I think, in more positive ways that would appeal to the, you know, the imagination, capture the imagination of people that are seeking for truth.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. I think that so many people in our generation are recognizing we're not a generation that has an idyllic storyline anymore. I mean, we have people who have come out of rough pasts, who have dealt with a lot of, who are bringing baggage into relationships. And I really like, I just wanted you to touch on this a little bit, because you do in that book we already talked about, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day, what it looks like to take adversity and to take a situation, whether it's a single situation or whether it's something that life has dealt you, and use it for God's glory, and to use it to rise to a challenge that ultimately, you know, believers of all people, having hope, have the strength and have the courage and have the purpose for taking on some big challenges. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how you'd kind of tell that story in that context?
Yeah, well, part of my story is I actually had a near-death experience when I just turned 30, and my intestines ruptured, and I went in for emergency surgery. I was on a respirator for 2 days, and lost 25 pounds in a week, and there are a lot better diet methods than that one. And so I literally, you know, I almost died, probably should have died. And I look back on that experience, Lisa, and man, that was the worst day of my life, but it was also the best day of my life. I mean, I look back, and I wouldn't want to go through it again, but it's amazing the way God can take some of those traumatic, difficult, life-changing situations that we go through, and man, he can redeem them. I believe that all things do work together for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose. It doesn't mean that all things are good, but what's so beautiful about being a follower of Christ is that, man, if you're not, if God's not part of the equation, bad stuff is just bad stuff. But when you are following Christ, then God has a way of taking that bad stuff and he can redeem it and use it for his purposes. And I look at my life and, you know, it's the adversity that I've faced. It's the challenges that I've overcome. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I love pastoring National Community Church. God's blessing this church. But I don't know that I would have the same perspective if I hadn't been a failed church planner. I tried to plan a church when I was in seminary, when I lived in the Chicago area, and it went belly up. It didn't happen. And so it was terrible when it happened, but those are some of the best things that happened to us. And I think part of the reason is you discover that the worst thing can happen to you, and God's still there, and he's going to pick you back up. And man, just a word of encouragement to listeners, because I think 20-somethings a lot of times are afraid that they have these fears that what they're afraid of is going to happen to them. You know what? I would almost pray that those things would happen, because I think that's when we discover that the fear of that thing is worse than the reality, and that God's going to pick you back up, and he's going to dust you off, and he's got plans and purposes that are far bigger than any mistakes that we can make or failures that we can experience. And so I hope that's an encouragement.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because as you were saying that, I was just reminded of a conversation we had in the office the other day about the swine flu and how, you know, we have a couple pregnant women in our office, and so they're concerned about getting the swine flu. Well, that transferred into becoming concerned about getting the vaccine, and are we going to be able to get the vaccine, and what kind of vaccine, and where do we have to stand in line? And I'm just like, I was thinking to myself, 3 months from now, we're going to look back and say, wow, we sure talked about the swine flu a lot. And it really, you know, if we got that worked up about the person down the street from us that needs to know the Lord, I think we could harness a lot of, you know, a lot of what God really wants us to do, a lot of that passion, which kind of brings me to the question, what would you, I mean, I kind of want to find out what really, whether it's right now or whether it's ultimately, Mark, you are passionate about. And I want to ask that by saying, if you had one day to clear your calendar and do whatever you wanted to do or accomplish, what would that be? And then if you had 6 months to release all responsibilities and just pursue something that you think is important, something you're passionate about, something that you could really just, you know, hit the ground running on, what would that be?
Oh, man, those are great questions. And I kind of feel bad almost saying this, but because it almost sounds like a pat answer, but I can honestly say that if I wasn't getting paid to do what I do, I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing. I love pastoring. I love the challenge of it. And so, you know, on that level, you know, in some ways, I feel like I'm living – the dream that God has for my life. I mean, I guess if you gave me a day, there's a few places I might want to go, or a few life goals that I haven't met yet. But man, I'm accomplishing those too. You know, I'll swim from escape from Alcatraz in June, and just ran a triathlon with my oldest son, and I'll hike Machu Picchu next summer. And so I've got a lot of, in fact, let me just throw this out there. I mean, I share my life goals, and actually I've got a little thing called 10 Steps to Setting Life Goals that listeners can download for free. Is it cool if I give out a website?
Absolutely.
ChaseTheGoose.com, ChaseTheGoose.com, and it's just 10 steps to setting life goals and some of the life goals that I've set and accomplished. And so, but in terms of what am I most passionate about right now, you know, you catch me right before my next book comes out, Primal, A Quest for the Lost Soul of Christianity, you know, when you write a book, it's, you know, I have three kids, and man, the birth of those three kids, like, nothing compares to that. But as an author, like, when a book comes out, it's kind of like having another baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, there's an excitement kind of surrounding it. And so really, in a nutshell, that book is kind of my passion right now. And it boils down to this, we've got to be great at the Great Commandment. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. You know, Jesus said, love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And if he said that's what's most important, it sure seems like we ought to spend an inordinate amount of time and energy understanding that and obeying it. And yet I would argue that in way too many instances, we're not great at the Great Commandment. In fact, we're not even good at it. Mm-hmm. And so, man, I'm just right now, I'm kind of singing one note these days, Lisa, that, you know, it's love God. And so I'm excited about that book coming out, and definitely have a little bit of creative fun with that Great Commandment. And man, it's compassion, wonder, curiosity, and energy. That's kind of my take on heart, soul, mind, and strength. And those ought to be four things that define who we are as Christ followers. So I guess that's a little piece of my passion right now.
Yeah. Well, and I know, I think the current release date for the book is New Year's Day, right? You're looking at 1/1/10?
Yeah. You know, for it just seemed like a book titled Primal ought to come out the first day of the year. Here's the funny thing, best laid plans of mice and men, but this is good. It actually is going to come out early. And so it looks like it's going to come off the press about a month early, and should be available on Amazon and bookstores right before Christmas. So good timing, and man, I think it'd make a great read going into the new year.
Well, and an important read, because it reminds me another thing that we learned that I could not even believe when David Kinnaman was speaking to us and talked about this. He said, in fact, I think he actually said it this way, that I guess they polled a bunch of people and they asked the question, spiritual maturity, or made this statement, spiritual maturity means trying hard to follow the rules in the Bible. And 66% of people who are in that elder generation said that that is true. They said yes to that. And
wow,
actually, as you drop down in the generations, the percentage did not drop that much. And I was like, what in the world are we doing as a church that this message is being communicated? That is like,
yeah, well,
I mean, to do good, to be a good Christian, 66%. And then, you know, and of course, and I don't want to diss the older generation, you know, because obviously these are the people that are passing on that heritage of faith. But can we please pass on the gospel, people? And not.
No kidding.
So, I think Primal is going to address this. But I think, I mean, it's just, it's amazing to think that we actually have to discuss this. I mean, doesn't it just boggle your mind that it's like...
Oh, it does. It does.
And oh, my goodness.
If you said, you know, in a nutshell, if you said, like, what's the problem here? I think it boils down to this, Lisa, that we fixate on sins of commission. Don't do this, don't do that, and you're okay. But the problem with that is this. You can do nothing wrong and still do nothing right. Mm-hmm. That is not the gospel message. God doesn't want to just save us from sin. man, he wants to save us to his plans and purposes. And so I honestly think there needs to be a shift. We need to focus on the sins of omission, what we would have, could have, and should have done. You know, God's vision for us is not to spend 90 minutes in a church pew. It's so much more than that. It's about us, each of us, maximizing our God-given potential, the gifts, the passions that he's given to us. And now that's the full gospel message, that it's not being just saved from something, but man, we've been saved to this great commandment, this great commission, and we're part of this thing called the kingdom of God that needs to advance. And so, I sure hope that the day comes that we stop thinking that breaking even is okay, because mm-hmm. it's not. I mean, read the parable of the talents, and the guy who broke even was called wicked. God wants more than that. And so I think we need that fundamental shift from just a focus on don't do anything wrong to, like, let's do something right. Let's make a difference.
Yeah. Okay, so as we wrap up here, I want you to help us unpack that just for a second, Mark. I need you to help us see what that looks like for a 27-year-old guy who is working, on the 14th floor of a building downtown somewhere. He's putting in his hours. He's he's in a local church. He's going to his small group. He has his roommates or whatever. What does that look like? What does that look like to strip down your faith to, you know, what you're saying, to love God and to love people? What does that look like in Washington, D.C., in New York City, in Des Moines, Iowa? What does the church look like when we actually do that, when we're so busy looking at our, you know, iPhones to figure out what our next coffee date is or what our next, you know, appointment is to do X, Y, Z?
Yeah, well, what's beautiful is that it looks as different as each of us look. Here's my personal definition of success, and I view success and stewardship as synonyms. Do the best you can with what you have where you are. I think sometimes we're focused on, like, we need to be someone else or somewhere else or do something else. Listen, that's a lie. It's not true. Like, you are where you are for a reason. And so I like to tell people that, like, your workplace is your pulpit. Like, that's where you share your faith. And, you know, I don't know what you do for a living, but, man, you can do that in a way that glorifies God. And it means doing what you do with excellence. And it also means just caring about the people that you're working with. And so we often think about, like, you know, going to church as a spiritual act, or maybe going on a missions trip, and, like, those things are great. But the truth of the matter is, like, we need to refocus on the simple fact that, hey, God wants us to live in the moment and make a difference right here, right now. And for some of us, that means we just need a paradigm shift that, hey, I'm doing what God's called me to do. And here's the other thing. You know, you may not be where you want to be, and that's okay. Like, if you're in your 20s, like, chances are you probably aren't where you're going to be in 10 years, and that's all right. But you got to prove yourself faithful in the little things. You need to do the best you can right there, right now, and then as you are faithful in that circumstance, then God begins to open up doors of opportunity. So just a word of encouragement that, man, we just got to make the most of those gifts that God's given us and do the best we can with what we have where we are.
Yeah, that's good. And I just want to encourage our listeners too. I mean, I've been thinking about this recently, and I think it's, maybe I'm in a unique situation because I work for a Christian ministry and then I'm involved in my church and I have my Christian friends. I've actually had to carve out time and space in my life for unbelievers. I mean, you know, and
yep.
I think if we don't have enough margin, if we haven't made margin in our lives to be able to stop and drop what we're doing and to allocate resources, whether it's money or time or energy, to relationships with people, then we are missing the mark. You know, I've heard it said before that if we're in, you know, more than two Bible studies a week, we're sinning. I've heard people say that, that's just sin. I think my pastor said that, because, you know, what are we doing? And I know for me, I'm across the street from a liberal arts college here in Colorado Springs. That's one of the most quote unquote liberal in the nation. And I went and I met with the Campus Crusade director from there. And I said, what would it look like if I opened my house maybe once a month for like a coffee house at my place where students can invite their friends, they can drop by, they can maybe once in a while we can have a discussion group. You know, and I think we need to get out of the box and need to start thinking creatively and start carving time into our lives and into our schedules to start looking people in the face and getting to know them as people instead of programs and projects. Because we always want to channel people into some kind of program or like go to this church and do X, Y, Z and whatever. But, you know, if we just get to know people, I think we would have so much more impact. So maybe that'll be a challenge for our listeners out there and readers of Boundless to start writing into us and letting us know how they're starting to do relationships, both with the Lord and with the people in their sphere of influence, to really start, as you said, impacting the culture for Christ. So,
Awesome.
Right.
Now you're preaching.
Well, I know. My dad was a preacher. I think I got it from him. If only I went to a church where women could be preachers, but I don't. No, I'm just kidding. I don't support that, people.
Well, that sounds like another conversation.
That's another whole interview. All right. Well, folks, we have been talking to Mark Batterson. As I said earlier, he is the lead pastor at National Community Church in Washington, D.C. He is the author of In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day and Wild Goose Chase and the soon-to-be-released Primal. Primal, and the subtitle on that is A Quest for the Lost Soul of Christianity. You want to make sure you check it out. You can now, folks can find out more about you at evotional.com, right? That's your blog, Mark?
Yeah, or markbatterson.com will take them to the same place.
Markbatterson.com, and follow him on Twitter at Mark Batterson. That's his handle there. So you can find out more about Mark. Look for the book when it comes out. Check it out around Christmas and leading into the front end of the year. And I would really just encourage you all to get the book and read it and pass it on to your friends and start discussions around this topic of what does it look like when our faith is stripped down, when we are literally living out the gospel with every aspect of our being. So, Mark Batterson, thank you so much for joining us all the way from the East Coast today. And we just appreciate it. And I'll wish you all the best in your ministry there. And hope that you'll come and visit us, in person sometime, maybe.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lisa.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace with me. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Well, we've got a question this week that I would describe as like being in a pickle. So this is one of those.
You're not referring to a sandwich, are you?
No. This is one of those situations that like all girls kind of dread being in, and it's super awkward, and it's kind of like, oh, friends, you know, versus acquaintances versus whatever. So this is going to be kind of interesting. Our listener actually writes in and says that she became friends or kind of like acquaintances with someone who shortly after moved to China, met a guy and got engaged to him. So now this girl actually wants her to be in her wedding. And she, our listener, accepted that, you know, saying, okay, but now realizes it's going to be, you know, kind of a lot of expense. And she's wondering, does she really have the connection with this girl to make this thing happen? She finishes her question by saying, it's going to cost roughly $300 to $400 to get back, basically fly back somewhere and be part of the ceremony. She says, at this point, I feel like I don't know her well enough anymore to sacrifice that much for someone I've only met once. I've discussed it with my mom and my closest friend, and they agree that I should back out. And then I guess she has a mutual, this, she's friends with this girl's sister. She says, you know, the sister is going to be devastated if I don't go, and I hate to look like a bad friend. My mom told me I shouldn't feel guilty for wanting to back out, but I do. Honestly, I haven't even spoken much to the friends I took the road trip with in the past year. Our paths have just gone in different directions. So she says, should I suck it up and try to raise the money and go, since she honored me with the privilege of being part of her wedding? Or is it wrong and selfish for me to decide to back out since I'm not close to her anymore? And how does one go about declining such an honor after already saying yes?
Well, and doesn't she say something about the bridesmaid's dress already being ready?
That could be too, yeah. She's basically, you know, she said yes a while ago, so preparations
right.
have gone into place, yeah.
Well, I think this is a fantastic question, because who among us, of you female listeners out there, hasn't been in a difficult situation? You know, at a minimum, everyone who's ever been a bridesmaid knows you're going to hate the dress, and it's going to be way more than you want to spend, because you probably wouldn't even spend that much, you know, for a hot date on Friday, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's just agree, it's possibly, or quite probably, an uncomfortable situation at some point. But this specific question makes me want to start by saying, when you are asked to be in a wedding, for those of you listening who, you know, this year, in the coming year, you'll be asked, count the cost before you give an answer. I think the tendency we have is to say yes because we're so honored that someone would want us to be a part of this important day. And we feel bad even thinking that maybe I wouldn't be a good fit for bridesmaid. And so the first step, if you haven't yet committed, is to say, is it really something I'm able to fulfill? And what I mean by that is not just, will the dress look good on me? And is that date free on my calendar? And can I afford to get to wherever the wedding will be? The real question is, am I willing to stand up as a witness before God and before all of the people at the ceremony for this relationship and in effect, vouch for this marriage that is about to happen? Am mm-hmm. I willing to be a witness that says, yeah, I think this is a good relationship and it's going to be a good marriage and they have the potential to form a good family and to have children and to raise them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord? I mean, this is something we tend in our culture to take very lightly, too lightly. We should take it much more seriously and really think through, okay, what are they asking me to do? Even if the bride and groom doesn't recognize the seriousness of this commitment, I think you can go to the wedding with the understanding that this really is a sacred honor.
Right, yeah. And I think it's a matter of recognizing that, you know, really, are you going to have input into this person's life? I mean, it sounds like she hadn't even met the fiancé at this
right.
point. And so it's kind of that, you know, it's not about, and I think a lot of women do get caught up in this, it's not about putting on a cute dress and doing a lot of fun things the day before the wedding and the day of. Mm-hmm. It really is more of a serious commitment. And I do want to say, practically speaking, too, because I've been a bridesmaid recently, you're going to find that it is more of an expense than you think it is,
right.
because it's not
it's
just a dress and shoes. It
yeah.
is travel. It is a shower. It is a bachelorette party. If you do that, it is, it's just a lot of stuff,
yeah.
you know? So you got to make sure that you really want to, you know, hang with this girl and her friends and put that investment into it. And I think that not doing it at all is better than doing it grudgingly and,
right.
you know, kind of being bitter or angry about the situation.
That's right. And I have a feeling that this gal asking the question maybe didn't feel like it was okay to say no, but I wish she had just been honest and said, you know, I'm so honored that you would ask me, but I really don't feel that I know you well enough, and I haven't even met your fiancé. I don't feel like I can fulfill a biblical version of the bridesmaid role, and so I'm going to have to say no. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to say no. So that's where I would ask people to start if they're considering this offer, you know, in the near future. Now, for the gal who's asked the question, she's already said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And having read the whole question she sent, I know she's already bought the dress. It's done.
Yeah.
And the wedding is coming up here pretty quickly. And I think she has a really good opportunity to have integrity and to follow through.
Yeah.
I would say you need to do it not grudgingly, but graciously, and be a light. There will be people at this wedding who don't know the Lord, that, you know, who aren't Christians, and you can go and be Jesus to them. You can be kind. You can put on the fruit of the Holy Spirit and really see yourself there to minister to the people, to the bride, to the groom, to the guests. And if you don't have the money and it's creating a serious economic hardship, let the bride know that maybe. Ask her about that. See if there's any way she... I don't know what the situation is. You know, I don't know. Maybe the groom's family has money. Maybe the bride's family has money. Maybe, you know, your parents have money. But I think it's worth getting there as long as it doesn't mean going into debt to do it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a serious economic hardship and suddenly your circumstances have changed and you don't have a job or, you know, you had a huge medical expense, you can certainly call the bride and say, man, things have changed dramatically and I can't afford this plane ticket. Then she has the opportunity to either release you or to say, oh, well, I'll buy the ticket for you. Mm-hmm. So depending on all the details, I think there are, you know, some different ways this might end up, you know, the end of the story. But the principle is count the cost before you make a commitment, and then once you've made a commitment, let your yes be yes and your no be no, and have integrity and follow through on what you said you would do.
Yeah. And I think there are certain seasons, too. I mean, I've mentioned several times on the show that last year for me was a season of having 14 friends get married. And I wasn't in all of those weddings, but I was in a couple, a few of them. And really, you know, it became a budgeted expense because I had gifts. I mean, these were like relatively close friends. So there are seasons of that. There are seasons, you know, where maybe that'll be lighter. But I think what you said is good, Candace. I mean, she has agreed. I mean, the best gift she can give this bride at this point is to follow through and not create additional drama and just realize that she's really going to be able to bless her with this, especially with a good attitude towards it. So, all right. Well, that is it for this week's show, as well as this year's series of shows. We are heading into the new year, 2010. This is a great opportunity for you all to write to us and just share reflections on this past year and maybe some goals that you have going into the new year. We talk a lot about intentionality on this show, and we would love to hear how that's playing out in your own life. For my part, I think my friends and I, my few remaining single friends, we're going to start a campaign, and it's going to be Find the Men in 2010. So we're going to see how that plays out. That'll be one thing that we talk about, maybe. That's just
I think
fun.
We need t-shirts, Lisa.
Find the Men in 2010.
That's the cleverest thing I've heard in a long time.
Find the Men in 2010. Although that's not even keeping with Boundless, because really they're supposed to be finding us. So how can we reword that? We'll have to figure it out. But anyway,
how about wedding the men in 2010.
There you go. Okay.
Or marrying the men in 2010.
Exactly. Something to that effect. So ladies out there, unite. We will possibly get Santa involved, because remember, he's the patron saint of single ladies. So I'm just saying. But anyway, we want to hear your hopes and your dreams for the coming year, what God is doing in your life and what you hope he will continue to accomplish in your life. As always, we have just finished off, just came off of our 100th episode just here recently. And we love you all. We thank you for being a part of this show and being part of really our community here at Boundless. Have a great year, a safe year. We will see you next week. Until then, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.